So if you can imagine the agentic worker is a piece of intelligence that has access to context or information and memory about your organization.
The Operations Leadership Podcast with Gautam Basu provides insights for today's business leaders on creating value through operations improvement, process excellence, digital innovation, and organizational leadership.
Hello and welcome to the Operations Leadership Podcast. Today we have a very special guest, Mr. Tony Wood. Tony's a seasoned operations leader, entrepreneur, and business advisor, and he brings with him a wealth of experience in various leadership roles across the UK and Europe. He has worked with prestigious institutions such as the Leadership Fellows at Windsor Castle and the CEO Collaborative Forum. In this episode, we're going to talk about the concept of an agentic worker and how to deploy agentic workers alongside human teams to improve productivity and performance. Hope you enjoy this podcast. All right. Welcome to the Operations Leadership Podcast, Tony.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's I've listened to all of your podcasts and I love them. And it's just great to be here. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Tony. Tony, you have a very deep background in leadership development at the CEO Collaborative Forum, as well as the Society of Leadership Fellows at Windsor Castle. So could you tell us a little bit about your background in leadership? And also, you're also quite deep in operations and technology. So maybe a little bit of a background regarding your experience.
So I think I started in leadership because I wanted to start a business. So I started a business about the turn of the millennium, I think. And I did it on my own. And I had a great team around me and I started growing it. And then I ran into a whole heap of problems. And I realized that leadership, you need to share your experiences to understand the type of problems and type of issues that you might have. And I hadn't got a great group of leaders around me. And I was really fortunate to be connected with the CEO Collaborative Forum. And it pretty much changed my life. I realized that there were these networks of incredible leaders who were willing to share, who were able to articulate that in a formalized way. And I didn't leave, and that was 14 years ago. And then I've also been fortunate enough to work in the Society of Leadership Fellows, which also is working and connecting with incredible leaders as well. So I suppose I've been surrounded by thousands of CEOs now, and in COCF had hundreds of challenges. And fortunately, it's a sit forward event. So hopefully some of it has gone in.
Yeah, absolutely. I sat in on one of the CEOCF events in Helsinki. I was very impressed with the structure and the outputs. And I guess it's CEOs talking to one another and going through their various challenges, quite diverse set of challenges from HR to M&A to fundraising to you name it. So I thought I was very impressed with the group.
Yeah, no, it is. And it made me realize that it's more about the sharing mechanism, and I think from an ops point of view, it's the one thing that I are grateful for the work that you're doing is sharing your challenges, your problems, sharing the things that worry you, that keep you up at night. Those are the things that I think we as a group need to do. And I should state right here, I love ops. I think it's my background. I've always had a technical background, started off in data entry actually, and then moved through systems and then some leadership roles in companies. And I love the immediacy of operations. I love it because when ops people, when we have a bad day, things stop.
Yeah.
When boards or I'm having a go at boards. I love you, board members. especially mine. But when boards have a bad day, you maybe don't see it for maybe a month or two, maybe even a year. But I know the ops work that I did in the bank, that I was fortunate enough to start with some really cool people. You're out for 15 minutes, you've got a massive problem and you're on the phone to the CEO. And so I think as ops, you really get your metal tested day in, day out, which is why I love it. I think it's great.
Well, we're very, very privileged to have you on the podcast. I think you fit very well. And I know you're doing some work around this concept of an agentic worker, and really specifically tied around artificial intelligence operations or AI operations. So can you tell our listeners, what is an agentic worker?
It's if you can imagine, when you're looking at agentic worker, you're not deploying at all like we used to in our ops environments. You're almost deploying intelligence. So if you can imagine, agentic worker is a piece of intelligence that has access to context or information and memory about your organization. So the work that I'm looking to do, I'm working on right now, is trying to understand how humans work in an ops, in a process-driven environment. And also on a side project, how board members work. So how do we understand, how do we as humans work in our companies? And trying to break down the elements of that that then can be completed by a form of intelligence. And that intelligence is getting smarter as we go. You know, the all the different tools like Llama, you're looking at ChatGPT, obviously, is one of the most common. But I think all of them have a level of intelligence, and it's how do you deploy that intelligence in our ops environment to make the most impact so you can scale faster. I think it also is one of the key things to look at is what are your team doing and how do they work and how can you help them scale and solve some of the key issues? Maybe it'd be better if I gave an example.
Yeah.
We had issues. Anybody who works in a regulated environment knows, especially in fintech, knows that you are going to have issues with your environment. So when we had those issues, we had to understand what was the problem, what had broken, what was working, or what wasn't working, I should say.
Sure.
And the one thing that we needed is really quick access to information about what's going on. Now, we had dashboards, and you can ask your senior tech lead what's gone on. But I always sat there and I said, I really wish that there was something that could give me a complete overview of what's going on with this issue. And that would be a great tool or great area for an agentic worker. When you have an incident, it could give you a summary of, here's the customers that are affected. Here's the systems that are affected. This is my recommendation of where I think the issue is and some guidelines as to what you would fix. And I think within our supply chain, within our systems, within our key processes, which have to keep running really, they need to be there up all the time. From an operations resilience point of view, some of these cannot stop for a minute, 15 minutes, an hour. That's the sort of information that I'd like an agentic worker to be able to scurry away, gather the information, and just let me know, where should I be looking for the problem?
Sure.
And then I resolve it right now in time, obviously, because these are the intelligence of these things is the lowest it's ever going to be. So it's only going to get, or they are only going to get smarter in inverted commas.
Yeah. And, you know, AI or artificial intelligence has been around for many decades already.
Yeah.
So how do these agentic worker concept, how do they differ from the traditional AI tools? Because you mentioned ChatGPT, large language models,
yeah,
so on and so forth. So are you talking about more large language model or how do you differ from the traditional AI tools?
Oh, that's a great question. And it was one of the things that really surprised me. I really thought that large language models would be able to solve a whole heap of my problems. And I had this SOPA project I was working on for almost like a year now, a year and a half. And then more recently, I've been rolling this out within organizations. And I thought large language models would really be able to solve everything. It would be able to logic. We've talked about reasoning. We hear all the things that people say. But I realized as I delved more deeper into this, and it will come on later on, the kind of practical steps where I recommend you just do and try rather than to put big projects together. I realized that large language models and ChatGPT are really great at understanding the intent and the information that humans give us through either the content, written, verbal. Really brilliant. What are humans saying? And they're really great at taking the output that we have in systems and then delivering those to humans. But they're not so great at following rules. I remember banging my head against a brick wall, trying to get within one process flow, trying to get it not to pretend to be somebody else. I go, why are you doing this? You shouldn't be this. You should be following these rules. And I realized that, no, a lot of the processes, a lot of the systems that we have running right now are perfect, but it's trying to pick which are the bits that we can implement intelligence to speed them up or to help it take the drudgery away from some of the team members or some of the ops people or some of the people in your company. So I think that it's more of an addition, it's a layering where you go, right, what is the best form of intelligence and the best tool for the job? And you think, oh, this tool will work there, and you deploy it. That's what we did, you know, for decades. And now we're saying, oh, which form of intelligence do I deploy and where? Does it have advanced reasoning? Does it not? How much does it cost? How much energy does it use? So we're always conscious about what are we using where? Because in ops, we do things that work. If they don't work, we're not going to do them. So we get to, I love the term play. I always play in my roles because I think it's great. It's how I learn best. But you got to play to find out the things that then can be repeatable and work consistently. And that's the key thing. When you have an operation that cannot fail, you cannot take risks. So you can, when we implement humans into that, we've always got, what are they saying? How are they saying it? What might that mean? And then we look at it. So for example, if you're in a fintech and you're getting on the customer complaints about a particular subject, it's really nice to get a summary on, are there any key categories? You know, is it an outgoing payments? Is it a faster payments? Is it card? You know, where's the issue? And if your customers are telling you, then you can find that out quickly rather than waiting for your customer service agents to give you a summary. So it's about aiding and working on the right widget for the right place, as it were.
Sure. And like a lot of these tools, whether AI or automation, they're best for, let's say, routine standardized processes. Would you agree that, for example, these agentic workers you mentioned, for example, like chatbots, are they structured and deployed best for these routine standardized processes?
I think it's where you're using large language models, they can understand intent and the categories and the issues that you're talking. So for example, you may have, and they're not all blank. They're not like, you know, you talk to your ChatGPT on your phone, you're actually crafting assistants that are refined. So you might have your base foundation model, and you may use something like ChatGPT 01 Mini, which is quite a bit cheaper than kind of like 01 Preview, which will be, or you're using GPT 4.0 Mini, which are reasoning engines. And then what you do is you overlay them with your information. So you fine tune them with the information that you have within your organization that may be, you know, is kind of evergreen. It doesn't change very often. And then you can add in the files, which are our RAG files, which we then put on top of that for information that maybe changes hourly or weekly. And then at that point, you can then ask that a question about one of your refined processes, and it knows that process. So it knows exactly a customer flow or a client, receiving information from clients or looking at feedback on the website, those sorts of things. So I think that's the one of the areas that I would look at first is repeatable processes that are quite boring for humans to do, that you can train and start to understand what are the guardrails that I need to put around this. And also, I think understanding what are the privacy concerns about where should this information go and how should it work. So yes, I think look at your key repeatable processes that could scale. You know, imagine if there are 1,000 Gortans, right? What would you do? This would be amazing. I'd love that. I'd have 1,000. I'd do a bunch of things here. I'd look at my different systems. So think about that. Think about this first thing is I'm deploying this intelligent. I'm deploying Gortan to fix a problem. But he may get at the moment, and this is going to change in time, but he may get stuck in things that take more than maybe 10 or 15 seconds. So you're thinking you're deploying him to this, this, and this. And in time, we'll start to get agents that can handle tasks over minutes, hours, days, weeks, months. And then you can give them key problems. But right now, I would deploy this intelligent or, and it doesn't matter what engine you're using, like they all work very similarly, but you can train them to give the answers that you'd expect, so then they can take actions. I mean, the one that's commonly used is customer rings up and says, I've lost my card. Then the agent should go, well, I understand if someone's lost a card, I can ask them that they want to cancel it. And when they do, you fire off a routine that then cancels the card for the customer.
Right.
So that's a nice way to have an agent do something that's in a, there's a set of guardrails of things sure. that it can do. And if it doesn't recognize it, it will pass it on to a human.
Mm, yeah. And you mentioned several times now about this deploying intelligence. And there's a lot of literature around HCI or human computer interaction. So what are kind of the key considerations when you're deploying this type of intelligence to work alongside human beings?
I think it's that there's a lot of lofty goals that we hear about when we talk about artificial intelligence and things like that. I'm more practical. I like to get stuff done. So the interface I will use is what information do you have that comes in and where does it come from? Can you stream that into your, say, for OpenAI assistant and then ask it? And then can you put guardrails around it to let it know, is it working or is it not? So I would really start super small. I would build up your team's understand of where the limitations are, and there's quite a lot of limitations right now, and start really small, and then find something that you've got that works, and then scale that all the way up. And the interface is voice in a lot of situations. So it could be talking to a customer directly, because it may be, you know, we've all been in those queues, you know, press one, press three, and then I'm stuck, or I don't understand what you want. And so we have this problem where we can't have enough customer service people to handle all the calls that people want. And so therefore we've got chatbots. But if we can have voice, I think that would be nice. I like talking to people. But I think the interface that people work on, I think people will be comfortable talking to an agentic voice, knowing that they can break out of that cycle quite quickly and then get handed over to a human. And I think this is the key thing. We're not about replacing humans. We're about scaling effectively within our organization. And I loved, I can't remember who said it, there was an incredible analogy of shepherding. So what you can do is a customer service would maybe shepherd 5, 10, or 20 agentic agents who are talking to customers. And then if there's an issue, it comes straight back in to a human who can then help you. But I think that human will also have an agentic shadow or a digital twin who will help them to summarize and understand what's going on.
Right. And it's interesting because you mentioned the example of a, you know, calling in a customer service. And if, for example, the chatbot or the agent does not understand the inquiry, it will go to, for example, a human. So from a design perspective, what would be the best way to design a system to have a seamless blend of human and agentic worker type of interaction?
I think, and it's, if you'd have asked me this, say 2-3 weeks ago, I'd have gone, well, but the research I've been doing, that there's some really nice platforms that are being developed now, that help you with those flows. So it's a process flow of taking the content from either your chat or your voice, and then putting it, you know, translating it into text if it's voice, and then putting it into a system that says, what would you recommend I do? So obviously in chatbots, you've got your backend, you've got your systems, your CRM systems that you're using to talk to your customers. You can implement immediately in those. But I think that it's thinking about what would be really great for the customer, not what do I have. And I think this is where things are going to change. Just like I remember, you know, what, in 1994, 95, when we had our first websites, we never realized what websites would be like now, you know, 25 years later, or God, 30 years later. So I think that there's an opportunity to just reimagine what the user experience or what the flow would be for your customers. What would they really want? And I think a lot of the time, I just want to talk to a human. I just want someone who understands me. I just want to get this problem solved. And, you know, sometimes I'm stressed because I've got a real issue. And so I think it's getting to the point where we can have that level of empathy where they can match my voice, or at least I know that it's not going into the great abyss. Somebody is actually dealing with it, and then I get a summary. So there's some kind of accountability. And so I think building the processes where there needs to be accountability for the company, and where me as a customer know that I'm taken care of and my information isn't being lost. And the context, you know, the worst thing is when you go from bounce to bounce to bounce from different customer service. Could you explain to me what the issue is? And the context then won't be lost, because if you're passing between agentic workers, they'll understand A, the entirety of your conversation, the context of your conversation, what's going on in the company. They'll understand if there are any issues or any problems that are happening. They'll understand the strategic focus of the company. So all of that stuff is really hard for customer service people to have. But if you're aided by an agentic worker that helps you, that guides you through that process, then that may help as well. I'm not sure if that answered your question.
Yeah, no, it does. It does. And okay. I think it's very interesting, that kind of blend of human and artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
Shifting back more towards the leadership, because you deal with a lot of CEOs and boards, as you mentioned. So how should leaders view agentic workers, you know, when deploying, for example, these type of intelligence? Is it just a tool, or is it something more? How should leaders actually think about this concept?
So I was a little bit cheeky on one of my boards. I said, I'd like to deploy agentic workers on the board so we can all experience what it's like and understand the problems. Are you okay with that? And we got that passed, which was good. So I think it's experience. It's just using it. And just understanding where the best place might be. So on a board, for example, I think it's, you know, as a board secretary or as a board compliance officer might be the best place to work, to use it, where people on the board can understand and see the benefits, but also see where the issues are. And I think that the challenge here is, how do we stay human in a world of AI? How do we make sure we capture that amazing aspect of us that's our humanity, which maybe we can't define. But you know what? We can augment it and help us resolve some of those issues, or help us resolve some of the issues within the company, or get strategic direction, or understand if there's any problems. So I would say for a board and leadership, absolutely start talking about it, start sharing it. And that's why I'm so grateful to be in COCF, where, you know, we have these challenges all the time, where we're talking about, you know, what's happening in the board, if there's, you know, you're raising funds, or you're moving to a new country, or you're moving to a new market, etc. And having those discussions and just talking about it, and saying, how could this help? And thinking about it as, how could I deploy an intelligence? So if, you know, there's this 1,000 Gortans that are flying around now, because we're going to have that. If I had 10 Gortans on my board, what would they do? How would they help me make a better decision as a collective, as a board, and maybe individually? In fact, one of the things I'm looking at is how do we gauge a board's performance? Because I started looking at this as creating an agentic board member, and I went, I don't even know how we gauge the output of a board. And so that moved me down to this line, is how do we gauge the output of people? How do we get the best out of people? How do we help them? So I think a lot of this thing, just like great sci-fi, because, you know, I love sci-fi, is when you break something out and you look at it on its own, suddenly you understand what we are and what humanity is and what humans are. And it really helps us question that. And I think that's one of maybe the gifts that comes from this, is going to be how we as individuals are able to look at ourselves in maybe a different light, and really maybe appreciate what we have. We're not just people that complete processes and automatons. We're incredible people who can, and beings who can do things and can create.
Yeah.
So I think that the best thing is, it's quite early days for a lot of people, and I don't want to, it isn't a technical task that people are rolling out. This isn't a tool. This isn't a technical tool. And I was talking to this guy on the train, and he said, oh, I'm not sure about AI. I think I'm going to be out of a job. He said, you know, I work with humans and consulting, etc. And I turned around to him and I said, well, you've got the exact skills that we actually need now. Understanding humans, understanding how to talk to them, what they do, how they work. And a lot of the technical skills in time will start to drop off. And the human skills, how we talk to people and how we work, those are really going to start to come to the fore. And I'm quite excited about that. If I can, as an aside, as a dyslexic, you know, I can't write for Toffee. I really can't. And AI has changed my life. I can write professional emails and professional reports. And that's amazing. It's like I've got this superpower.
Sure.
And I think that it has this ability to maybe help people who have those issues, you know, neurodiverse, or people who maybe, you know, I wrote a document for someone in Polish, and I've never done that before. And it turns out it was reasonably good. So suddenly language ceases to be so much of an issue. And when we get communication, when we understand that we can communicate, and we kind of are able to let go of some of the challenges and the self-esteem issues that maybe we had, there's something really great that's going to come from that.
I agree with you fully. And you know, the gentleman on the train that you mentioned of, I think, because it still is early days with these type of agentic workers, a lot of them are experiencing fear. They may lose their job. You know, they want to talk to an actual human, so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So how do you kind of frame that, especially among the leadership set? You mentioned getting this passed through your board, of having an agentic worker on your board, or, you know, CEOs having agentic workers help CEOs in their decision making. So how do you frame that for people that are experiencing some hesitancy or some fear, you know, of these type of tools or technology? How do you frame that?
Yeah, it's funny. I was talking to a friend of mine on Saturday about this, and I said, "Well, wouldn't it be great if we could have we could have an agentic worker that could really help coach the CEO based on some of these things?" Like, stop there, he said. Hang on a minute. Are you going to try to do me out of a job? And I went, "No, I'm not." There are so few mentors and great coaches for people, but there are thousands, if not millions, of entrepreneurs in the world. So I think that we've got a long way to go before we lose that. I was having a conversation about the legal system and lawyers. You know, we don't have that many lawyers, and a lot of people find it expensive to get legal representation. So if we can have agentic workers that can help us in that area, suddenly, you know, what is it? I think there was a stat where only a few percentage of cases in the US and are actually seen by a lawyer. If we've got this opportunity where people can get legal advice, at least to, you know, an average lawyer, well, that opens up a massive, massive opportunity for people. And I think this is the thing. We can scale up. There's a long way to go for us to scale up. And I think that it's going to be less frightening than we think it is. I mean, I think we passed the Turing test. You know, I know the a lot of the advanced chats. I mean, it came and went, boom. Okay, yeah. Where did that go? Suddenly, that just was this big thing that we talked about. Oh, it's going to change the world. And it came and went. And we went, all right then. So I think we're going to start to see, and we adapt so well. And I think as leaders and entrepreneurs, we adapt to change. We create new things. We craft new experiences, and we're really great at that. And I think we also need to be great storytellers to tell our team, you know, this isn't going to affect you. It may affect some team members, but I remember back in the, I think it was the 80s, when we moved from printing, physical printing down to digital printing, they said, oh, okay, this is going to wipe everything else out. But what it did is it created new opportunities in different areas. It's different because we're deploying intelligence. But I think in the next 5 to 10 years, there's going to be this incredible time where we can maybe solve some of the issues that we have or take some of the drudgery out. I know already for me, I'm able to do things in hours that used to take me days or weeks to do. And it's finding those things to say, okay, so what does this mean for my business? How can I as a leader help my business progress? And sure, there's going to be companies that maybe ignore it, but then maybe they won't do as well. You know, if I can get all of my team to be, you know, to 10 times my team for the same payroll because they're using agentics, I think it makes sense.
Absolutely. And you mentioned something very interesting about adaptation. And there's a whole, you know, literature around adaptive leadership. And it reminds me of Charles Darwin, right? It's not the strongest species that will survive. It's the most adaptive, isn't it? So this is here already. And as you said, it's moving very quickly, already passed the Turing test. So it's just going to keep going from here on out. So maybe a question around this concept of an agentic guild. Can you tell us a little bit about this agentic guild?
How do you get agentics or agentic workers or intelligence, artificial intelligence into your organization? And when I coach COOs, I always say, look, let's create an agentic guild, a guild where people who are like-minded can join and just talk about it. Talk about maybe their worries, their concerns, about how we could roll out intelligence within our organization. Because a lot of the best ideas come from people who are doing things day in, day out. And I think that in ops, we see those issues day in, day out. And sometimes we go, oh, if only I could solve that, but I haven't, you know, because we never have enough time, we never have enough people, never have enough money. That's just, that's part comes with the territory. But this time, if you have an agentic guild, just a group of people talking about how could we change this? There's this thing I do that just really annoying, that takes so much time. Could we do it? And then you share ideas and you share tips and you start really small, meaningful, small, not massive projects. I'm sure you can, but I prefer starting with things, doing a pilot, finding something that's going to have meaningful impact to people. And we can remember this will impact people's lives to, you know, to take away a drudgery job, or to help them or to train them, whatever. So if you start off in that guild and you say, okay, in this area, I really want, you know, let's just work on that. You pick one, you know, low hanging fruit. You make sure something that's doesn't take too much time, has massive impact. And then you can, you know, write up a proof of concept or a case study for it. And then you work on that and you build it up. I mean, think very much like the early days in the 90s of using websites in HTML. I mean, even email. I remember once having a race where we raced a fax against an email, and it was a dial-up line and it took forever. Anyone who remembers, like, there was this thing called Demon Dial-Up or whatever, and it had to dial up on the modem. Yeah, and it only just won, but we had to prove it, and literally the fax was just like a 2 seconds slower. And I think it's that people need proof, right?
Yeah.
And why not? We're in ops. We work with proof. We work with things that are there, that are tangible. We want to improve our resilience. We want to improve the tooling that we're working on or how we're working, or reduce a process or reduce the time. So I think, yeah, start off with a group of people, call it whatever you want. I like agentic board. And then just see what happens and just give people the opportunity. I think you're going to be quite surprised about the people who adapt to agentics or work with agentic digital twins or whatever. And I think it's going to be quite interesting to see who those are. And it could be anyone. And this is the great thing. This is so new. It's so untested. Who knows what sort of mindset would take to it best? And so, you know, the great organization, every single person, I would think about, you know, pull some from different areas and just ask, you know, who's interested in it, and trying to get people to try and help them. You know, I think it really helps with neurodiverse individuals who maybe want to use it for a particular area. It will help people who maybe don't have the education in one area. And I think it has that, it has a great leveling up ability, which sure. I'm quite excited to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I know you also deal with a lot of, let's say, bottom line focused people as well.
Yeah.
So what are the tangible, if you were to do a business case on agentic workers, mm-hmm. in terms of cost, service, cash, time, so on and so forth, what are some of the, you know, financial or operational benefits that you see from the utilizing agentic workers?
I think I would scan your organization for processes that you do time and time again. I would then break it down and go, okay, so how many, if humans are doing those roles right now, what's your failure rate? And truly understand that, is it a 24/7 job, or is it just, hopefully it will be one of the tasks that you can do 24/7. So I would say it's quality, because you can put guardrails around it and have evaluator agentics that are looking at the work that other agentics are doing. You can enable, you could save costs because you're doing twice as much, because a human isn't doing it. So therefore you're not paying payroll. A human could maybe shepherd, I don't know, 100, 1,000 of these, and look at the edge cases or where it doesn't know what to do. Those could then go to a human, which would be slightly more interesting than the drudgery. So I think it has all of them. I think it has time saving. I think it has cost saving. I think it has the ability for us to truly understand what those processes are, because a lot of us create processes, create policies. How many of those policies and procedures are actually followed on the floor? So sometimes it could be that way we improve our ability to be regulated, because we can prove that this happens time and time again. So I would just start off. I mean, I say to my COOs, I just say, look, if this saves an hour or 2 hours a week, great. brilliant to start with. And then it can only do more as we understand how it works. So I think the key thing is it can help with all of those areas. But it also helps us explore those areas, because operational resilience is really tough within an organization, which processes can't fail. And if they can't fail, you know, maybe deploying an agentic that's looking at that and understanding where those issues are before you even get a problem. So I would say probably the best is to look at, or if you're looking at a customer service point of view, just understand, you know, are there repeated issues about, you know, ATMs not working, for example? And then you can get there before they even get reported to you. And maybe they could put some things in place to help, you know, collate enough information to help you solve the problem quickly.
Interesting. Yeah, this is super fascinating. And it's, I'd like to say that it's a glimpse into the future, but it's already happening now. So I would say that it's just going to speed up. And like you very well articulated, that, you know, it's adaptation, it's deployment of this intelligence and leveraging it for a diverse group of folks within the organization. So, Tony, if people are more interested about learning about these AI operation, agentic workers, how would they get in touch with you?
So you can go to aioperations.com. So if you can imagine AI and operations, but remove the O.com, you can go there and there's a contact form. You can contact me. I'm on LinkedIn under Tony Wood. But more than happy to talk with you. I think that the key thing that I'm interested in is this, as you said, this is here now. These things are, the tools and all of those are available now. It isn't just a technical thing. It's a human thing. And I think us that understand, or people who understand humans or humanity best, are probably in the best place to be able to work with it. So I think this is something that I hope everybody everywhere is starting to do. And what's that great saying? AI won't take your job, but somebody who knows AI will take your job. If I can use a kind of like an overused thing, but I think it's true. So just delve into it, find something that works, and have fun. This is like a really cool time. It really reminds me of the early 90s and the 90s, you know, and there's this feeling of excitement that people can do anything, and I think you can. And so spin up a company that does it, or find some money within your organization, become an entrepreneur, and do something within there, but explore it. And you know, it's one of those things that I think will really be good for us as a whole. And so sure. I'm positive about it.
Awesome. Well, this is super, super interesting, Tony. I want to thank you for your time, and hope to have you on again for a follow-up episode.
Oh, I'd love to. I've got some great research that I'm doing right now and super happy to share. I think this is one of the things that is best shared.
Wonderful. Thanks again, Tony.
Thanks, Gautam.
That's it for this episode of the Operations Leadership Podcast. I'm your host, Gautam Basu. If you like what you're listening to with this podcast series, then please hit subscribe. And until next time. We'll be right back.